several lessons flash on and off in these verses. The first lesson is the awful sin of pride. The awful sin of pride. Now here's a king who had been sick, sick unto death. He had turned his face toward God and expected to die, really. But then he sought God and not the physicians. And God had added 15 years to his life. Every once in a while somebody says, well, when your time comes, it'll come. You can't do anything about it. No, you don't know the Bible. There's no such thing as your time to die unless you live in the perfect will of God, and then God has a time to take you to heaven. But there are many people that prematurely go to the grave long before their time. Hezekiah was about to die. He sought the Lord, and the Lord gave him 15 more years. Now then, Hezekiah gets well, and can you believe it? He got cocky. That's a sad thing, an awful sad thing. We frail creatures of dust, simple, hell-deserving sinners that we are, have nothing whereof we ought to brag or boast. The best looking of us is ugly in the sight of God. The strongest of us is weak compared to God. The smartest of us is ignorant compared to our God. And everything good that is about us is because of Him. There's not one single thing about Jack Hiles that's any good unless God has made it so. I have not whereof the glory. God has given you, God has put your nose in a better spot in your face than He's put mine. And God has made your nose a little better shape than He's made mine. And if God happened to put your eyes a little better place than He's put mine. And if God has happened to give your eyes a little more beautiful color than He's given mine. And if God has shaped your lips a little better than He's shaped mine. And if God has made your physique somewhat better than He's made mine. You have not whereof to glory. You didn't make yourself. If you have a face that folks think are pretty, there's nothing to brag about. You didn't make your face. And you have nothing about which to boast. Listen, everything you've done is with the grace of God. Everything you have is with the grace of God. Everything you are is with the grace of God. And there is not one reason why any one of us should ever boast. But boast we do. and brag we do. And exalt ourselves we do. When there's not one reason why we should. Here's Hezekiah. Hezekiah was dying. And God said, Hezekiah, I'll miraculously raise you up and give you 15 more years. Hezekiah had nothing to boast about. It was God that did it. Oh, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, 'tis God that has wrought this mighty work here at First Baptist Church of Hammond. 'Tis God that's given us this mighty work. 'Tis God that's brought these crowds. 'Tis God that built that school, the schools. 'Tis God that's brought these folks down the aisle. And all the 20 years I've been here, I haven't saved a soul yet. One day, Mr. Moody was walking down the street in Chicago. A drunk walked up and said, "Hello, Mr. Moody, you know me?" Mr. Moody said, "I'm afraid I don't." "Hey, you know who I am. Sure you do. You know me." And Mr. Moody said, "Who are you?" And he said, "Mr. Moody, you saved me." And he said, "Yeah, you look like one of my jobs." I guess that's the way all of us would be. Our job, nobody can save anybody. Listen, Jesus said, "Upon this rock, I will build my church." I haven't built this church. We haven't built this church. Jesus has built this church. And let the glory be to Him. Let the honor be to Him, and let's strip from ourselves any veil or any robe of honor or praise or glory that belongs to Him, and let not there be one shred of glory come to any single person in this church. There's a second thing here, and that second thing is this. We should watch carefully after a great victory, very carefully, after a great victory. Did you know the devil comes to us after great victories, perhaps at more than at any other time in our lives? Let me give you a few examples. Job. Job. What a man Job was. Job was the fellow who lost his children, 10 children, killed at one time. And yet Job said, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." Job lost all of his wealth with one fell swoop, all of his wealth. And Job said, "I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth." Job lost his health. the awful disease of elephantiasis, a form of leprosy, with all kinds of boils all over his body. And yet Job said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Job lost his wife. Job lost his friends. Job lost everything he had. He who was the richest man in the kingdom became the poorest. He who was the strongest man in the kingdom became the richest. He who was the mightiest man in the kingdom became the weakest. He who was the most secure man in the kingdom became the most insecure. And there he sits in the garbage heap. And he says, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And yet the honest truth is, when Job stood the test and God came back and gave Job twice as much as he had before, old Job said, boy, I stood the test, didn't I? Did you notice how I stood the test? Did you see that? I lost my kids. I didn't turn my back on God. I lost my wife, and I didn't turn my back on God. I lost my riches, and I didn't turn my back on God. Boy, oh boy, did you see me stand? I expect he wrote the denominational paper and said, Job has stood through more trials than anybody in the history of our great denomination. And you know what? That man who had stood after his great victory, he crumbled till one day God had to take him and say, Job, I want to take you on a little guided tour. He said, Job, look up at the moon at night. And Job looked up. And God said, Job, how many moons have you made? And God said, look at those stars up there. And Job looked. And God said, Job, how many stars have you made? And God took him out to the ocean and said, look at there, all the fish of the sea. Job, how many fish have you made? And God took him and showed him a great oak tree and said, Job, how many trees have you made? And God let a rainstorm come from heaven. And God said, Job, how many times have you made it rain? And God let the hailstones come from heaven. And God said, Job, how many times did you make it hail? And God let the snowflakes fall. He planned to let a few fall here before long. And he said, Job, how many times did you make it snow? And there for two chapters, God wrung Job out. And he said, Job, you're not so hot. And Job fell on his face and said, I abhor myself. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody's right with God till he abhors himself. Oh, you say, boy, I guess I'm the best basketball player in the class. You're a sinner. You deserve to go to hell. That's what you are. Oh, you say, boy, I tell you, I'm so pretty. Have a little hard time with that myself. But I give God all the glory for my beauty. And I'm so pretty. Not only what you are, you're a hell-deserving sinner. And there's not a single person in this room tonight. But what if you got what you deserve? You're burning hell forever. We have nothing we ought to glory about. You better watch it, brother. You better watch it. You better watch it after you've had a great victory. Ah, Job had one of the great victories of history. But soon he stumbled. Look at Elijah. Elijah stood on Mount Carmel. He said the prophets of Baal. He said, you pray for Baal to bring fire down and consume this sacrifice. And they prayed, and he said, louder! Maybe he can't hear. And they prayed louder and beat themselves and said, oh, Baal, hear us, hear us! And Elijah said, why don't you wait a while? Probably he's gone on a hunting trip. Can you imagine that? That's no way to talk about the Pope. About these fellows. And Elijah said, your God's going on a hunting trip. So maybe you're back after a while. Maybe he's pursuing or being pursued. Maybe he's chasing a bear or a bear's chasing him. Said, he'll get back after a while. And they sat down and waited till he got back off the hunting trip. And, oh, Baal, hear us, Baal, hear us, Baal, hear us. And Elijah made fun. He mocked him. He said, oh, Baal, hear us, Baal, hear us. You'd have thought he had a bad spirit if you'd have been there. And you'd have changed churches. But anyway, Baal, hear us. Oh, Baal, send fire. Oh, Baal, send fire. And then they didn't get any fire, as is always the case with those that don't believe this book. And no fire fell. Elijah said, step back, boys. First team's coming in. Elijah said, dig some trenches around this here altar. Then they dug some trenches around the altar. Elijah said, okay, put 4 barrels of water on there. Do it again, do it again. I want to make the sacrifice wet. If God's going to send fire, I want you to see what my God can do. And they took those 12 barrels of water and poured those barrels on that sacrifice that ran in the trenches around the sacrifice. And God, Elijah stood up and said, oh God, thou the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, send fire and show these people thou art God. And down came the fire and licked up the water and dried up the trenches and destroyed the sacrifice. What a man. Then Elijah said, you folks, he said, you liberal ministerial association guys, come here to me. And they came and stuck their heads out. Elijah got a knife
And he said, okay, buddy, there goes your head. And he said, there, and he chopped their heads off. Did you know that? Oh, I'd love to do that one time. But he chopped, you say, for the house, he chopped, yeah, what a man. Stood up against all the false prophets, hundreds of them. And he said, the Lord, he is the God. The Lord, he is the God. Boy, what a man. What a man. Elijah goes back to his study and sits there and he puts his feet on his desk and he says, boy, oh boy, wow, look what I did. Man alive, I guess nobody's ever done that before. And the phone rang. And his secretary said, Pastor, it's Jezebel calling. And he picked up the phone and he said, hello there, Jez, how are you? And she said, Elijah, I got word for you, buddy. She said, you better get out of this country. She said, before sundown, I'm getting you. And that man, who stood before hundreds of prophets, began to tremble. And he called his secretary and said, I'm taking a vacation. And he took off out of town and ran from that woman. Can you imagine it? And then he got under the juniper tree and said, Lord, I want to die. I think he was lying. If he wanted to die, I'd let him stop running. That's what Jezebel had in mind for him to do. And he got under the juniper tree and said, Lord, I'm the only one left. I'm the only one left. Yeah, that's the mighty Elijah. That's the guy that prayed down fire. You better watch it after a great victory. Oh, if your bus route was unusually good today, you better fall on your face tonight and bless God for that. If you had a big Sunday school class today, you better not lift yourself up. Listen, listen. I never, on my trips around the country, I never tell one thing about the First Baptist Church of Hammond. Folks beg me to. Pastors say, tell them what happened yesterday. Tell them. I won't do it unless they ask me a specific question. Why? I want to be dead sure that he who is the one, who is the altogether lovely one, gets all the credit and all the glory and all the honor. Watch it. Watch it. After a big victory, Hezekiah for 15 years, had 15 years added to his life. Hezekiah said, I think I'm going to show all these kings what I got here. Don't you recall the story of Noah? God came to Noah and said, Noah, it's going to come a flood. Noah said, what's flood? He said, it's a heap of rain. Noah said, what's rain? Now get this, folks. It never had rained. Suppose God came to you and told you to build a boat bigger than this building right here. And you said, why? And God said, I'm going to send a flood and destroy everybody on the face of the earth. But you and Ham, Ms. Ham, and Japheth, Ms. Japheth, and Shem, and Mrs. Shem, and Mrs. Noah. But it never had rain. Did you hear me? It never had rain. And Noah, for 120 years. Now get this now. Can you imagine what the neighbor said? Mr. Noah, what are you doing? I'm building a boat. What's a boat? Something that floats on water. What's water? Something that falls out of the sky. Rain. What's rain? I bet you little kids came and laughed. Hey, Mr. Noah. Oh, Mr. Noah, building a boat. Lost his mind. He ought to be in Westville on the front row. And lost his mind. But Noah built that boat. And built that boat. And built it. And down came the rain and up went the boat. And Noah was spared. And as soon as the flood was over, Noah got drunk. Yeah. Got drunk. Better watch it, Hezekiah. Better watch it, Job. Better watch it, Noah. Better watch it, deacon. Better watch it, preacher. Better watch it, staff member. Better watch it, soloist. Better watch it, Sunday school teacher. Better watch it, soul winner. Abraham. Jonah. Jonah went up and down the streets of Nineveh saying, 40 days and Nineveh shall be destroyed. And Nineveh repented and got right with God, and Jonah was sorry about it. And God had to send Jonah a miraculous lesson. Enough of that. Now I say this third lesson. I spent too much time on this, but third lesson. And that is this. Better watch it for trying to impress the heathen. Jimmy? Better watch it. Hezekiah said, hey, I want to show you folks, the king of Babylon, bring your staff over here. I want to show you our riches. Don't be too interested in impressing the heathen. Somebody said, Dr. Hiles, don't you know that the schools and colleges around America
look down with disfavor on Hiles Anderson College? I dead sure hope they do. I'd hate to think these heathen monkeys run up and down the campuses would think our school was a good school. Now, I know when I get on this subject, boy, I'll guarantee you some folks turn their hearing aids all the way off. And somebody said, wrote me a little note, said, when are you going to get off the sins of the schools? When the schools get right, that's going to get off the sins of the school. And by the way, don't you write me a note and tell me what to preach. And when you tell me what not to preach, that's what I dedicate myself to preaching. You're wasting your ink. You're wasting your paper. You're wasting your strength. I promised God Almighty years ago, nobody would interfere with my preaching. You better keep your hands off of it. I got off an airplane in a certain city. Pastor took my bag, and he said, as we walked to the airport, he said, Dr. Hiles, he said, we're having a certain problem here. And he said, there's one conviction I happen to know you have. He said, I'd like to ask you not to mention that conviction here. Now, I had not intended on mentioning that conviction. It was not one of the sermons I was going to preach there. I took my suitcases for him, walked right back, and climbed up on the airplane. And he said, where are you going? I said, I'm going back home. He said, why? I said, because you told me one thing I couldn't preach. If you told me I couldn't preach roses are red, violets are blue, brother, I wouldn't stay. I wouldn't give you a dime for a preacher trying to impress the heathen world. I wouldn't give you a dime for a school trying to impress the heathen. And I want to make this very plain. And if you don't like it, you'll have to figure out some way to lump it. But I'll make it plain. And I'll preach as long as I've got strength to preach it. And that is this. I will not ever acquiesce to a bunch of heathen, godless people approving the college that I'm associated with. I won't do it. Yeah, but how? Aren't you accredited? No, it's not accredited. And neither is the Harvard Law School accredited. Did you hear what I said? I said, neither is the Harvard Law School accredited. Did you hear what I said? I said, neither is the Harvard Law School accredited. We've made a Greek god and a golden beast out of these accrediting associations. Watch out there! Look out, Hezekiah! Quit trying to impress that heathen king! And I say this also. There's a fourth lesson here, and I haven't gotten to the sermon yet. But there's a fourth lesson here. And that fourth lesson is this. No country ought to make a salt treaty with a heathen nation. No country. It is none of Mr. King of Babylon's business. What's his name here? I've forgotten the guy's name. It's sort of a hideous kind of a name. 2 Kings 20:15. Let me see what his name was here. Keep out of my preaching. I told you a while ago, nobody tells me what to preach. Barodak Baladan. Hezekiah said, your honorable Barodak Baladan, I'd like you to come and see our arms. And Isaiah said, did you show your arms and weapons, that heathen king? And Hezekiah said, yes, I did. And he said, that king will destroy you. Listen to me, America. Listen to me, President. What's his president now? Johnson, Kennedy, Carter. Listen to me. Hear me, Senate. Hear me. You show that godless Russian crowd what we have in our arsenal here in America. You show them our bombs. You show them our planes. And God in heaven will see to it one of these days they'll have our planes and bombs. The most ridiculous thing on the horizon in America tonight is the SALT Treaty. None of Russia's business how many bombs we have. Let her wonder. Now to the text. Isaiah came and said, Hezekiah, what have they seen in thy house? What have they seen in thy house? Let me ask you a question. Suppose tomorrow afternoon you looked out the window. This is a horrible thought for any woman. And you saw Brother Hiles, and beside him was John R. Rice. Beside him was Lee Robertson. Beside him was Bob Jones, Jr. First place, you get all those fellows beside each other, you got a miracle.
I didn't mean to say that. I'm very, very sorry. I didn't mean to say that. But suppose that the four of us walk down the sidewalk, and your child said, like one of the girls that out in Hessville said, "Mama, that God man's here again." And all of a sudden, it dawned on you that Jack Hiles, John Rice, Lee Robertson, and Bob Jones Jr. were going to come in your house and investigate every room in your house. What would you do after you woke up? What would you change? Huh? Huh? Besides putting my picture up on the floor, on the wall. And Dr. Rice's books on the coffee table. What would you do? Huh? Little boy. The preacher was in the house visiting, and the little boy didn't know it. The little boy came in and saw his mother, didn't see the preacher, and said, "Hey, Mom!" He had a frog with a leg. He said, "Mama!" The frog was dead. He said, "Mama, I took this frog and did like that with it." And the preacher's over there, and the little boy didn't see the preacher. And he said, "Then, Mama, I took him and I threw him against the side of the brick wall. And then, Mama, I took him and kicked him down the sidewalk." And then he saw the preacher. And he said, "And then, Mama, the Lord took him home." I wonder what you'd do. Huh? I wonder what you'd do. Let me go a step further. Suppose Jesus came tomorrow afternoon down the sidewalk of your house, rang your doorbell, and you looked out and you said, "It's Jesus! It's Jesus!" What would you change? What would he see in your house? Huh? Anything you'd take out of the refrigerator? Anything you'd take off the wall? Any book you'd take off the shelf? Any magazine you'd take out of the rack? Huh? Any games you'd take and hide? Huh? If your home is in the ghetto or a pad within a cell, or a college dormitory is the place you choose to dwell, if a lonely army barracks is the spot you find to sleep, or a distant silent motel is the place you sigh and weep, if your home is in the sick room or an aged mission cot, or a simple small apartment has been chosen as your lot, or perhaps it is in a rest home where you search for rest at night, or a bivouac tent in battle is your homesick, lonesome plight, you may make his breast your pillow for your trouble-weary head. You can make his face an altar and the will of God your bed. You may feast upon the manna from his garden of delights while his angels sing around you to release your anxious frights. 'Tis a lovely ivory palace filled with all of heaven's best, if the Savior e'er abideth where you go to bed and rest. If he came to your house, what have they seen, or what has he seen in your house? Has he seen two teens in bed together? Did you hear my question? Did you hear me? I said, did Jesus, and by the way, Jesus does see what's in your house. And Jesus does know what goes on in your house. And Jesus does see your icebox, refrigerator. And he does see your bookshelf. And he does see your magazine rack. And he does hear the music. And he does see what you watch on television. I said, has he seen two teens in bed together? Oh, you say, Pastor, what are you talking about? If I came home and I found two teenagers in bed together in my house, I'd kick them out of my house. I'd call the police. I'd call their parents. I'd be shocked in horror. And yet it goes on in 90% of the homes in this room every week of this world in that little box you watch. You know what I'm talking about. In God's dear name, why don't you turn that thing off? In God's dear name, why don't you stop and realize, ladies and gentlemen, you're inviting teenagers and adults to go to bed together in your family room. Something mighty wrong with you. You wonder why our kids are going to hell. And you wonder why our young people are parking in cars and committing fornication. And you wonder why our young folks go bad. You wonder. 'Tis no miracle. 'Tis no wonder.
What have they seen in thine house? Have they seen a winsome guest luring your children to drink? Oh, you say, preacher, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't allow a bottle of whiskey in my home. I'd die before I would. Yeah, but you let Hollywood send one of its best representatives and best personalities and stand right there in that little box and try to talk your children into drinking liquor. Something might be wrong with you. Listen, there needs to be tonight in this room a parental revival. I mean, a parental revival to say, as long as I am a mother or a dad in this house, my kids are not going to watch a man get up or some woman get up with a winsome personality and try to persuade my children to drink whiskey and drink martinis and drink beer. How foolish you are. How foolish, how foolish, how foolish. What have they seen in thine house? You know, I was thinking last night. Anything makes me mad, and a lot of things do, and if a lot of things don't make you mad, you're not right with God. I'm so sick and tired of this. You know, if you ever get mad, you're not a good Christian. If you don't get mad, you're not a good Christian. I heard Brother Olaf say one time, Bible says, hey, he said, brother, let not the sun go down on your wrath. He said, that doesn't mean don't let the sun go down while you're angry. He said, that means keep the sun shining on your wrath all the time. Always stay mad. That's one of the great exegesis of Scripture of our brother. And you ought to stay mad all the time. You ought to stay mad because we're wine and dining in Soviet Russia. You ought to stay mad because we're letting Red China, United Nations. You ought to stay mad because of the way we have forsaken Taiwan. You ought to stay mad because of the communists on our campuses in our school. You ought to stay mad because of the dope that's running wild and the sex and the filth and the garbage. You ought to stay mad about it. And we had some folks to get as mad about the rot that's going on in this country as Jane Fonda can get about the garbage she puts out. We'd save this country. Oh, I don't like her. I'm sure that'll break her heart, but I don't like her. I don't like her husband either. The crowd they run with. That's what makes them mad. I get mad when they say, you take those little children to Sunday school and to those Christian schools and you brainwash them. Well, bless God, most of the kids, that crowd, their kids need some clean brains, I'll guarantee you sure. And the old man ought to have his brain washed every once in a while too, as filthy and full of garbage as it is. And yet they say, we brainwash, and they put that box there and put people there and brainwash our kids to do wrong and evil. You know it's the truth. Biggest brainwashing job done in this world is being done in these little places we call our schools in this country. So they take those kids in there and brainwash, and this Bible's not so. Well, bless God, if brainwashing a kid is making him believe this Bible, so I'll brainwash him. I'll brainwash him to believe that right is right and wrong is wrong. Yeah, you sit there and nod your head, say amen. And yet the honest, simple truth is, your kids are being brainwashed in your house day after day after day after day. What have they seen in thine house? Have they seen a burlesque show? Oh, you say, Brother Hiles, I wouldn't invite a burlesque show in my house. Suppose you came home. Suppose your husband said, I want you to see something, honey. You walk in there and... and all these gals showing their breast and two-thirds of their breast and their legs and part of the behind and their navels and the bellies and got about that much material covering just a little bit. You would say, what are you doing in my house? What are you doing in my house? And yet you sit there night after night after night and watch the Donnie Osmond. Is that it? And they'll have a burlesque. Oh, but you say, they say they're Christians. I'd suggest they put some clothes on their soul winners then. Now, you know I'm telling you the truth. You know I am. And you know it came out of hell. And you know it's garbage. And you know. Listen, I get tired. Brother Dave, people a while ago when I said, boy, the home. And we ought to have more time for our kids at home. And some of you folks. But yes, the truth is, if most of you had them, you wouldn't do anything with them in there. And I'd rather far be at a youth activity than sitting home watching that box. I mean it. Now, if your home was what it ought to be, then I'd say, bless God, you're right. And if your home's what it ought to be, then you don't need as much of the youth activities as other homes do. But you better off your kid to be up there practicing some singing group or at a, some kind of a bowling, Christian bowling party, and sitting home watching the Osmonds or MASH. What have they seen in thine house? Have they seen and heard cursing? Huh? Oh, you say, preacher, I'll tell you, one of my kids said a curse word, I'd wring his neck. Well, how about those movie stars that you invite in? You know what I think? I think it's time that our boys and girls made heroes of God's men. I picked up a book I told you about. Found one of these books our kids signed. Who's your hero? Clint Eastwood. Is that his name? Westwood. Northwood. Hellwood. Clint Eastwood. My hero. I'll tell you something. Listen to me. Any child that says Clint Eastwood's his hero, his parents have not been right with God. I'll tell you I won't come back next Sunday night. Well, then I guess I better let you have more than I'd planned on giving you tonight, hadn't I? You know I'm telling you the truth. You know it. What have they seen in thy house? Have they seen harlots? Interviewed on the Johnny Carson show? Have they seen harlots? And homosexuals? As honored guests? On the Merv Griffin show? Huh? Oh, you say, I'll tell you, I can't understand this homosexual. One person out of seven in San Francisco, California is a homosexual. And you're shocked. And yet you sit there glued to that little thing and you watch those dirty homosexuals and you watch them and they're dressed real nice and they talk about and they make fun of Anita Bryant, and make fun of, call bigots of those of us that believe in decency. Let me tell you something, buddy. You're not a bigot because you believe in decency. And you're not a bigot because you believe this book. I got more respect for the homosexual crowd than you folks that stand up and say you're against it and invite them into your living room. What have they seen in your house? Have they seen rock records and heard rock music? That satanic beat, same thing that Moses heard when he came down off the mount with the Ten Commandments, the tablets of stone, saw the Israelites dancing, same kind of dancing the disco dancing is, same kind of rock and roll dancing that we've seen in our generation, and the same use of the house. That started in our generation. No, sir. My Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. And the Egyptian filth and garbage Moses found when he came down off Mount Sinai is exactly what some of you fools are listening to tonight. When I say the word fool, I'm not being unkind. I'm telling you, I think you're foolish. What have they seen in thine house? Have they seen books that dishonor Christ? I guess you may not want to call me scholarly. We don't even allow textbooks in our schools if I know about it. And Dr. Evans knows about it. And Mr. Staub and Mr. O'Clair, they know about it. We don't allow textbooks in our schools with pictures shouldn't be in there. Dr. Evans and I sat down and looked at the science book we use at Howells Anderson College. And the science books that show nude bodies in there, we have those cut out. Cut them out. Oh, but you say that's just culture. You've got to be kidding. You've got to be kidding. There's not a red-blooded American male in this house tonight unless you're a homo. Not a one of you that wouldn't look at those pictures and have some sensuous feeling. I never forget it. I was talking to a policeman one night on soul winning. Big old fellow, about 6'4" tall, giant guy. And I made that statement about dancing. I said, she's, what's wrong with dancing? I went to your church, you preached against dancing. Well, the first place, dancing is dumb. If you're going to hug, sit down and hug. Don't walk around all the room and hug. Everybody's dumb. Second, I said to her, I said, it's not a normal American male that can put a beautiful gal in his arms with perfume on, with her shoulder, the dress not finished, without having dirty thoughts. And she said, well, my husband can. And I looked up at him and I said, can you, George? Well, he said, I am. Can you, George? She said, George, tell him. I said, tell me, George. Well, you say, Brother Howe, it doesn't affect me. Dr. Streeter, do you have any appointments for tomorrow? You need to check some people here. Something wrong with them. Doc, do you have any time over here to check some of these fellas? Something wrong with them. Give them some chelation. What have they seen in your house? Have they heard... Uh-oh. Have they heard brothers and sisters fussing? Huh? What have they seen in thine house? Have they heard you young people fussing with each other? You use my cutter. Well, tell him to get his own. I don't care what you say, buddy. No two Christians are supposed to be at odds with each other. Well, you say, you know how brothers and sisters are. Yes, if they're born again, they ought to be kind to each other. What have they seen in thine house? Have they seen children disobedient to parents? Have they seen teenagers talking back to mom and dad? What have they seen in thine house? Have they heard mom and dad having fist fights? What have they seen in your house? Have you been a bear to live with? I've gotten that many letters this week from wives who said, my husband is a bear to live with. What have they seen in thy house? God's people aren't supposed to fight and fuss. Have they seen dust in your house? Have they seen a dirty house? Have they seen a lazy woman who doesn't keep her house clean? Or a lazy man? You know what I mean? I cannot comprehend these house husbands. They have them across America now. The woman goes out and makes the living. And the house husband does the shopping and the sewing
It just, somehow or other, it just doesn't appeal. I mean, it's just beyond me. What have they seen in our house? Have they seen the Bible in a prominent place? Have they seen the Bible has been used? Have they seen scripture verses on the wall? Have they seen beer in the refrigerator? Have they seen dice and cards? What would you do tonight if Jesus came to visit you? What would you change? Listen, Satan. Satan's big attack, ladies and gentlemen, is on the home. Would you like to know why the interest rates have gone sky high? Would you like to know why the prime rate goes up 13, 13.5, 14, 14.5, and will keep going up, I predict, past 20%? Would you like to know? I'll tell you why. Because the devil doesn't want our young couples to have houses in which to live. He wants to put us in some great big communal-like apartment and break up the individual family unit. That's his goal in this age. Add that to Hollywood's emphasis. You know what the HEW is really after? They're after breaking up the parental authority over the children. I want to say something. I'm not for abusing a child. I drove down Sibley Street, came to the corner of Sibley and Calumet one day. I saw a mother had a stick. Big around is that microphone stand. And she is beating her kid across the back with that stick. I stopped my car and got out and I said, "Lady, are you going to quit that or am I going to take that stick away from you?" She was about to kill that kid. And I think she could. She came out of a tavern. I'm not for that. But I'll take my chances on letting the parents have the children before the HEW. These psychologists, Dr. Streeter is telling about one. When you go to a hospital these days to have a physical checkup, the psychiatrist has to examine you. And I'll be honest with you, most of them are nuttier than fruitcakes. And do you know what they're saying? They're saying, "Young people, have you ever gone out and spent the night in a motel with a boy? Do it!" They're sorry as the hell that spawned them and where they're going when they die if they don't get converted. They're after our homes. You know what the ERA crowd's really after? They are after the mother caring for the child concept. They're after the family unit. They're after the home. You know what the homosexual crowd are really after? Is really after? They're after the home. Do you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know in some parts of this nation, you know that homosexual couples are adopting children? Can you imagine it?
"Sweetheart, go put the baby to bed." "Okay, sweetheart."
They're adopting them. The whole rotten, hellish mess is an attack on the family. It was a little shack in the country with a wood stove, kerosene lamps, an outhouse out in the backyard, a Sears Roebuck catalog sitting there on the shelf that never was used for ordering. The love of God was there. It was a little shack. The floor was so bad that a snake one day crawled up through the floor, and I walked in the little front room and saw a snake that big around crawling across the floor. But the love of God was there. It was a little one-room place on Hudsworth Street, and I was 7 years old and slept in a baby bed. Same bed I slept in since I was a baby. If I was seven, I slept in a baby bed. The love of God was there. Oh, I can recall the fusses Mom and Dad used to have. I can recall Daddy coming in at night, 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. I can recall the fights. I can recall the nights we waited on Saturday night down in front of the Dallas City Hall, because Daddy said he'd meet us and take me out and buy me a hamburger. And I can recall waiting till the last bus came to take us back home, and getting on the last bus and going home because Daddy never showed up. Well, I can recall when Mother and Daddy called me in the living room, the front room one day, and announced to me that Daddy was leaving our house. I can recall that. But I was lucky. I had at least one parent out of two that loved God. I had at least one parent out of two that taught me right from wrong. And I'll bind you this. Brother, Jesus could have checked our little apartment. And he wouldn't have found anything that displeased him. Truth is, he wouldn't have found anything. He moves in an apartment. First thing my mama did was clean it. She cleaned it. She became personally acquainted with every rat and mouse in that apartment. And she sentenced him to die and executed him. Many a time, I'm not kidding you, many a time I've looked at a piece of cheese on a rat trap and wished I had it. Rats are better fed in our house than I was. Mother, first thing she'd do, we'd rent sometimes a furnished apartment. She'd look under the mattresses for bed bugs. My mama hated bed bugs. Good night, she hated bed bugs. My mother can take a pea shooter, knock the eyeball out of a bed bug at 100 yards. We didn't have any carpet. We didn't have anything on the floor but linoleum. And you try sometime walking on linoleum in the wintertime barefoot. Eskimos and igloos have nothing to compare with it. We had a stove, wood stove. Stove pipe going from the top of the stove up out the roof. A damper in the middle of it, close off the air, open up the air. Look great down at the bottom. My job every night. It's my job to bank the stove. Now, you poor dumb folks don't know what banking the stove is. You don't take a stove down to Hoosier Bank and make a deposit. What you do? You close the grate down at the bottom. You close the damper in the stove pipe so no oxygen or air can get to the fire. And the fire in the stove has no oxygen getting to it, and it simmers all night long. Fire doesn't go out. It just simmers all night long. And then the next morning is my job to get up and unbank that fire. Now, the house had gotten cold because the fire didn't give out any heat. It was down there, but give out no heat. My job to get out of bed on that linoleum floor, walk across the room. Oh, my feet are cold now, thinking about it. And to get the poker, and to open the grate and open the damper and stir up the fire. You've heard me say it in years gone by. As far as I know, I'm the only person in the world to ever gotten out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and gone to the stove across the linoleum floor in wintertime, opened the grate and opened the damper, got the poker and stirred the fire, and got the fire unbanked and went back to bed without my feet touching the floor one time. But I'll bind you one thing. Jesus Christ himself could have come to our little place. And we wouldn't have had to move a thing. Not a thing. What has he seen in your house? Huh? In your room, young people, what has Jesus seen in your room? Dirty pictures?
rock records. I want to say what I said before. Any student at Hammond Baptist High School that listens to rock music is a dirty liar, because you promised not to listen to it when you come to Hammond Baptist High School. You're a deceiver, an imposter, and a liar. You know the message and rules of that school. You know it. I'll tell you another thing, too. Some of you parents ought to take these earphones away from your kids. You know, I'm in a mood tonight. I think I'll just preach about an hour and a half on women wearing slacks all of a sudden. I mean, I'm simply saying that Hezekiah said, "Come on, Babylon, look at it." And Isaiah said, "What have they seen in your house?"